I'm Dave Rubin, and we are in D.C. And joining me today, people laugh just when you say D.C., is the congressman for Ohio's 4th District who just won his reelection by a landslide. He also serves as the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee and is a co-founder of the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman Jim Jordan, good to see you, my friend.
Good to be with you. Good to be with you. Congratulations on all your great work and success. We appreciate what you do.
Thank you. Well, I'm just trying to save the country like some of us are trying.
God bless you. It's a great country, and it's the greatest country ever. It's worth saving. It's worth fighting for, and so thank you for doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. First off, I have to ask you, why aren't your sleeves rolled up?
It should be.
That's your trademark.
It's not as hot in D.C. as it normally is here, and so, sometimes on a committee hearing, when that witness is from the government and you know they have not been square with the people I get to represent, sometimes you got to roll up your sleeves so you can really get after them because they deserve it a lot of times, in my judgment, a lot of times. Like a Fauci guy. You know Fauci. How many things did Fauci tell us that were not true?
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, exactly.
See, pretty much everything.
Exactly. Well, did you see the piece in the I think it was the Atlantic, like 2 weeks ago? Let's all just...
Oh, amnesty.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah. Like, let's just all get along and not worry about the things that said that, you know, shut down the economy, cost people their jobs, let people not go see their mom or dad in a nursing home, and maybe they were on their deathbed or something. I mean, like, crazy stuff that this guy did to us. Oh, let's just forget it. And I'm not like, it's not about holding a grudge, it's about accountability so it doesn't happen again. And that guy, anyway, I didn't even mean to get started on that, but you just some reason I thought about it, like, what the heck?
Well, all right, we can get to some of that stuff, but I have to ask you, the first thing I have to ask you is when I booked this trip to D.C., we knew we were doing it right after the election.
Yeah.
We thought the red wave was coming. It's a trickle at best. Yeah. We still are unclear exactly where the House is going to end up. Senate is not looking great. We'll see what happens with the Georgia thing, all that. But clearly the Republican Party, which I think should be doing much better than it is in this strange state of flux. Mm-hmm. What is going on here?
Well, look, the positive is I do think we're going to win the House. It looks like 219, 220, maybe 221. So anything 218 or up is win, and winning beats losing every time. I learned that a long time ago. So that's the positive. But you're right. We thought it was going to be more. I do think I was talking with a conservative reporter who I have a great deal of respect for, and she said that we're going to have to do the ballot harvesting, the mail-in voting routine as good as they do, because you know we won the popular vote.
Yep.
50 some million to 47 million, whatever, I forget, but it was like...
I think it's about a 5 million difference.
Yeah, so 52, 47, something like that. Yeah. So, which is great, and turnout was up compared to 2018 midterm. So something's going right there, but we lost so many close ones in these states where there's a huge mail-in vote, it seems. Like we lost all of them. The one incumbent we kept in Nevada, but we thought we could win any of those three seats and Laxalt Senate race. We didn't win any of them. So... we're going to have to do something different there, Washington State, Oregon, California, Arizona, these states where there's such a mail-in.
But is it possible to do, first off, do you want to do the exact same tactics as them? Because generally, people on, let's say, our side don't like these tactics, right? We like to show up and vote and feel that paper trail and all of that. Trust me, it was, I did it in Florida this time where I had to show an ID and a piece of paper. It was a pleasure, as opposed to Cali, where if you show an ID, they'll basically arrest you on the spot. But so that there, do you want to really, like sort of philosophically, do we want to do all the shenanigans that they do? That's number one. And then number two, can it be fixed in these places that are so calcified blue? What machinery can actually go in there and fix it?
Well, it can't, you can't change the law to something like in Ohio. You're in Florida, we're in Ohio. Ohio's the same thing. You walk in, show your ID. There's two Democrats sitting there, two Republicans, show your ID. Oh, yeah, you're Jim Jordan. There's the voter registration thing. Find your name, flip it around. You sign it, signature match, give you a ballot. Color in the people you want to vote for. Paper trail in a machine results.
Exactly the same as Florida. It was great.
So we get our results just like Florida. We get 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
So California's not going to change because Democrats run everything and they got super majorities in their legislature. So they're never going to change their law to like what we have in where it makes sense in Florida and Ohio. So I think you just sort of have to, and I get it. I did the same way. I voted on election day. I think you're just going to have to say like the rules have changed. Mm-hmm. Like my background's wrestling. If the rules change in wrestling, you got to adapt to the rules. Like, a takedown's worth two. If they're worth three and change what a reversal's worth, it's like, okay, you got to readjust your strategy. I think the same thing applies here in those states. And again, it's still going to be tough on Republicans because, you know, a lot of times Republican voters are more rural voters. So to show up at people's homes is different in rural right. Central Valley of California than it is in apartment buildings in San Francisco to take ballots of people and get their votes. So, I think we're going to have to.
What do we do about that disconnect? You know, when they show you the map of the country right now, the country geographically is like 80% red. And then, of course, you have the big cities that are blue.
Yeah.
I don't think that disconnect can hold forever because people are getting really frustrated with that.
Yeah.
You know, you live in the places where they grow the food and you're fighting for resources with the people in the big city.
Right, right. It's our chief of staff has a great line. He says, you know, West Central, North Central Ohio, the great district I get to represent, we make things, grow things, move things. And I always tell, you know, people on the coast who can work remote and you know, sit at home in Northern Virginia drinking their $15 cup of coffee, harassing the truck driver and the manufacturer and the small business owner in Lima, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it, and it is frustrating. So, and of course, the mainstream press is all the people, you know, working remote. You can't remote work the crops in, right? You gotta go out and plant the crops. It's like, so it is a frustrating thing. I hope we can come together at some point because it is so divisive. It's like we had this huge election, millions and millions and millions of dollars, maybe billions of dollars spent. Probably was billion because Kevin raised like, I think he raised like $500,000 himself. So billions spent. And we basically, it looks like we're going to almost be status quo. We're going to get the House, but the Senate's going to maybe even go down. I think Herschel's going to win in Georgia. So we're going to be the same result.
Are you okay with the splitting of the states in that, you know, I saw something just the other morning that it's something like in the last 3 years, about 500,000 people have left New York. Now, a huge percentage of them end up in Florida. They vote red. Florida becomes more red. And then, unfortunately, New York becomes more blue. Kathy Hochul only won New York by about 330,000 votes. Those people stay.
Yeah.
Things look very
Lee
different.
Zeldin's governor.
But,
yeah.
Right.
And we get Lee Zeldin, who I think has a huge future. I
mean, great guy.
What do you think about him? Because he did something that pretty much nobody thought could be done, and very few people knew who he was a month ago.
I got to know Lee during the first impeachment. There were four of us who were in almost every deposition. We were actually down in the bunker in the basement of the Capitol, I think, more than Adam Schiff was, because it was Scott Perry, Mark Meadows, Lee, and myself, and then our staff lawyers, Steve Kastner, and our team. Lee's a good man, smart guy. And again, this is the other thing I think is important. He was a good, disciplined candidate about talking about the things New Yorkers cared about. And I would argue his intense and quality race that he ran is a big reason why we picked up so many seats in New York.
I think New York flipped four seats,
right? And so we tweeted out, God bless Lee Zeldin, after we started winning a bunch of those New York seats. Yeah, I think he's got a bright future in our party and is a good man with a good family. And what he went through in that campaign, God bless him. It's tough. I mean,
literally attacked on stage. But what do you think about the states kind of going their separate ways in some sense?
Well, I think it's just happening. No, it's Americans. Yeah. Americans, but you know, because remember our it's in our DNA. When we started this place over in Europe, they said you got to practice your faith a certain way, and they said no, we don't. By golly, we're going to get on a ship, risk it all, go to this place where, you know, we call America, and we're going to do it the way we think the good Lord wants us to, and we're going to have our goals and our dreams, and we're going to make them happen. And people in New York, where they're being attacked and on all kinds of things, and all the left wing, they're like, well, forget this noise. I'm going to go to Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Texas. I'm going to go to Nashville. I'm going to go to Tennessee. You see that happening. You can't blame Americans because, like I said, I think that's kind of in our DNA to some degree.
Yeah.
We naturally crave freedom, and they're going to places where you can experience freedom.
Yeah. Are you?
It does make me concerned because it's tough then to ever win. Are we ever going to get California back? It's probably going to take a whole generation, and maybe it's going to get. It's sad to say, but maybe when it gets even worse in these places, maybe then people see the light and say, "Okay, time out. We just can't take it anymore." And we sort of thought that was going to happen Tuesday, and it did to a smaller degree.
I think I've asked every Republican that I've had on the show this, so I've probably asked you this question at least once or twice before, but when you talk to your Democrat counterparts, do they honestly believe that the policies they're implementing are working? Or do they just believe, you know, the sort of cynical view would be that they just believe it's keeping them in power because they're giving people stuff and it's working.
I think the ones who are still sort of open-minded and not just totally left-wing radicals, I think they think like, yeah, this is... Well, even Maloney said this week that, you know, after he lost his race in New York, I saw where he said something like, this whole defund the police movement is crazy. You know, well, we haven't heard a Democrat say that for 3 years, but he finally did, and he happened to be the guy running the Democrat campaign apparatus. So I think deep down some of them know it. But remember, the left controls that party.
Yeah.
The left controls that party. And there was a survey done 2 months ago, Democrats asking Democrats, and 55% of Democrats said they do not think America is the greatest nation mm-hmm. ever. That's frightening. You got a majority of one of the two major political parties in this country that doesn't believe what you and I know to be fact, greatest yeah. country. I've traveled. I've been yeah. to, I wrestled in the Soviet Union. I went to Cuba in 1988, 1990. You go to places like that, you thank the good Lord you live here.
Everyone still wants to come here. Yes. Nobody's leaving.
So that's the control. That's the power in their party. And mm-hmm. a bunch of the folks in Congress buy into that idea that America is somehow... I mean, America's the greatest country ever. It's not perfect, but it's the greatest, and they just don't see it that way.
Do you think that just got strengthened within their party because they didn't really suffer any massive setbacks? So now it's like, yeah. well, we can kind of keep going with that stuff, right?
Joe Biden said it. What are you changing? Nothing. Nothing. Like, okay, so you want the people you're supposed to be leading and representing, the American people. You want them to continue to pay $5 for gas. You want them to continue to pay a 41-year high inflation rate. You want them to continue to have crime everywhere. You want to continue to have a border that's no longer a border. I mean, really? You want to continue to see the Constitution attacked by your Justice Department?
But okay. That's what I mean about the cynical version that's not very cynical. I think they're looking at all that and going, man, these people must be idiots because they keep voting for us or whatever they're doing with the harvesting and everything else.
Yeah.
There's been no price to pay.
They're going to lose the House. They're going to lose the House. I'm confident of that today.
So what are you guys going to do? Let's get into some of that quick. Okay, so you get the House. Now maybe you can do some hearings about some things. You've led the charge on a lot of the big tech stuff. It sort of feels like a lot of that is now in the past, that people aren't even thinking of it as an issue anymore. Maybe in a good sense, in that Elon's now come in, Twitter feels like it'll be a little fairer.
It'll definitely help.
So that's good. But does anything come of these hearings beyond the moments, you know, you nail someone or Rand Paul nails yeah. Fauci on this?
And it shouldn't be about that. It yeah. should be about the facts.
Yeah.
It should be about the American people. Part of our constitutional duty, we take the oath of office on January 3rd. Part of our duty is to get the due oversight so the country knows the truth. They deserve that. So I'm committed to doing that in an aggressive way. And I think when you do that, hopefully it begins to slow down some of these agencies and the things they're doing that I think are just flat out wrong. And again, we've seen some unprecedented things happen. 14 whistleblowers come talk to us. We issued yeah. a 1,000-page report a week and a half ago. That 1,000-page report highlights how political the place has become, the Justice Department. One FBI agent, and again, he's talking about not the rank and file, but the people at the Washington field office. One FBI agent who came to us as a whistleblower said the FBI at its top, at the Washington field office, at its leadership level, rotted to the core. Direct quote. I mean, you got an agent who's given his life to this agency saying it's rotted to the core at its leadership level. That should tell us something. So, and then the negative reaction we got from the mainstream press mm-hmm. on this report tells us we're, I mean, that's always a good sign when the Washington Post is attacking you, that's usually a good thing.
What do you make of this report that was leaked about how the administration for sure, or at least the intelligence services for sure, were working with big tech to silence people? Yeah. I mean, they admitted it, Psaki admitted it. Remember, we flagged posts for Facebook. But now they're like, we have the evidence. But the question is, and I think everyone wants to know, wait, okay, well, is anything going to happen?
Yeah, you know, and I get that question. And it's, I mean, if it's frustrating for you and I who follow this stuff, imagine just right. American citizens who are busy running their business and volunteering at church and going to Little League and soccer games, and imagine what it's like for them. So that is frustrating to all of us. I always point out to them, though, all we can do is get the facts out there. At some point, you got to have a Justice Department that's willing to prosecute people. If you got the government actively pressuring press, pressuring these social media platforms to restrict information, and they're doing it for purely partisan political advantage, that is a total violation of the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Totally wrong, and those people should be held accountable. but I don't know that this Justice Department will do it.
Right. You may remember I had a tweet in July of 2021 saying that vaccine mandates were coming, the vaccines aren't working as promised, and in essence, we should pause and think about it. And I got banned and the question from Twitter.
God
and the
bless
question
it
is,
saying it though.
The question is, was that pressure that someone in the administration or
did Fauci get on the phone and call?
Which is then a direct violation of my
Jack
First
Dorsey,
Amendment rights.
Yeah. Time, or maybe he was. He maybe he already left. But whoever did he call Twitter? Did he call Zuckerberg? I mean, we know Fauci was texting and emailing with Zuckerberg. So yeah, or someone else. I mean, remember to your, you mentioned Jen Psaki. I'm watching. So Jen Psaki in the White House press room. This is I don't know, 6-8 months ago. Jen Psaki. Now think about it. The White House is the center of freedom, considered like the beacon of freedom in the world. And you're in the White House, in the press room, in the West Wing, and the press spokesperson for the President of the United States, Jen Psaki, standing at the podium in the press room, and she says, most Americans get their news from social media platforms. We're working with those social media platforms to understand and limit what Americans see. And I literally saw that live, and I'm like, what?
Is anyone paying
you're the
attention?
Press person talking about limiting the press from the press room in the White House. Like, what are you?
But again, there's no price to pay him, and she just gets a six-figure deal at MSNBC.
This big shot at MSNBC, so.
All right, we only got about 3 minutes left, so I'm going to ask you the big one, which I'm sure is the one that you don't want to talk about probably, mm-hmm. but last time I had you on, you said that you absolutely would support Donald Trump if he runs. We're taping this on Monday. It sounds like he might make some sort of announcement tomorrow, but you can already feel what's really going on here, which is that the entire machine wants to set this up as some sort of Trump DeSantis, you know, battle royal and then just destroy everybody kind of thing. What do you make of what the future of the party will be? And is there a way to do a fight out in the open that leaves Republicans kind of okay at the end? If DeSantis even wants to run, I don't know.
I don't know. Well, look, I'm for President Trump. I think he's the best president we've had, and certainly in my lifetime, maybe ever, just did more of what he said he was going to do than any president I've ever seen. And he did it with everyone in this town against him. Every Democrat, everyone in the mainstream press, half the Republicans, and all the bureaucracy. And in spite of that, got more done than, you know, and I used to just go down there. There's an amazing list of things.
Yeah, no.
So I'm President Trump. I think he's the leader of our party. I want him to run again. The speech he gave Monday night before the election in our state.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a leader. So I'm for him.
Yeah.
But Ron DeSantis, look, there were nine of us who formed the Freedom Caucus 7 years ago. Ron was one of the original nine, and he's done a great job as governor. But
do you think there's a way to have it out with the two of them without really irreparably damaging somebody? Because policy-wise, they're both nailing it, but that means it's going to have to get to something else that's going to be pretty dirty, probably.
Look, I hope it's President Trump, and I'd prefer Ron, you know. Keep running Florida, and then
listen. I love Florida. I feel like I'm going to win either way here. But,
you know. And then run for president. He's got plenty of time, but that'll be his decision. But no matter what, I'm going to be for President Trump. I think he was the kind of leader that we need. And if there's a competition, then you know we're the party competition. The voters will decide. And you know, God bless America. I always, you know, like I said, my background's wrestling. You got to win the semifinals before you get to wrestle in the finals. That's just the way the tournament goes. And but I still remember, this is relatively early in President Trump's administration, Mark Meadows and I, this is before Mark was chief of staff, we're in the White House and we're visiting someone in the West Wing and one of the offices, and it may have been Jared's office or somebody's office, but they had a big whiteboard on the wall and they had listed every single promise President Trump made to the American people in the 2016 campaign. And they were it was packed. Get out of the Iran deal, embassy in Jerusalem, build the wall, get out of Paris Climate Accords, conservatives on the court, cut taxes, reduce regulation, blah, 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 blah. It was packed because he made a lot of important promises. And they were checking them off. Just literally checking them. That's how you're supposed to govern.
Yeah.
What'd you tell the people you're going to do if they give you the privilege of representing and serving them and leading them? Go do what you said. And no one's done it better. And people say, well, yeah, but you know, some of the things, I think that toughness is the only attitude that can work in this town. When you look at how bad the mainstream press is, how mean the left is, how vicious the cancel culture is, you've got to have someone as tough as Trump to deal with all that. That's why I'm for him.
It's funny. I used to always, people would always say, you know, well, I like him, but, you know, the tweets. And I would always say, well, you can't tell the guy who did the thing that no one said could be done that he has to act a little more like you would act. Yeah. Because most likely you didn't accomplish that.
And you probably said this too. I don't have to go back and look. But my guess is you're like some of the smart political people we have that work with us. I don't think anyone else could have beat Hillary Clinton in 2016.
No,
he was
for
the
sure.
only one that could have done it. The only one that could have done it. And imagine if we had her there. We'd have had the same thing we had on Biden for 2 years. We've been living under that for 4 years, for goodness sake.
Look, the simple truth is, no matter whether he runs or not, or becomes president again or not, or whatever, like, we owe the guy a massive debt of gratitude. All of the truth that we're now seeing, whether we can do anything with it or not, it is in large part because of him. It's in large part because of you. Yeah, thank you, my friend.
It's been because of you. Thanks for what you're doing.
Roll up those sleeves. You're freaking me out with them.
Here we go for the last 2 seconds, right? Last 2 seconds.
Jim Jordan rolling his sleeves. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning into The Rubin Report. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. If you're looking for early and exclusive content, you can join me on Locals at rubinreport.locals.com.